So what are you supposed to do between each Engadget podcast? Wait in silence? I'm Matt Smith, and every morning I walk through the day's biggest tech stories. It's short, relevant, and ready for listening whenever you wake up. Find Engadget Morning Edition wherever you find your podcasts, or ask your smart speaker for the latest news from Engadget.
What's up, Internet, and welcome back to the Engadget Podcast. I'm Senior Editor Devendra Hardawar.
I'm Deputy Editor Sherlyn Lowe.
This week, we are previewing Apple's Worldwide Developer Conference, which is kicking off next week. Sherlyn and our Editor-in-Chief, Dana Woolman, are going to be there on the ground. But we have some information. We have some leaks and things people are excited to see. So we will, let's dive into what we expect. And next week's episode will be a full, recounting of everything that actually happened, okay? So, as always, folks, if you like the Engadget Podcast, please be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes or your podcatcher of choice. Leave us a review on iTunes and, subscribe wherever you can. That's always good. Also, you can join us Thursdays, 10 a.m. Eastern on our YouTube channel. We do a live stream there, so you can see some behind-the-scenes action when we have devices to show off. Sometimes we do some Q&A, and we'll show off stuff there. And you can join the chat room. It's always a fun time. Also, if you have any notes about the show, please drop us an email at podcastengadget.com. We'd love to take your questions on air. Let's move on to the main news of the week. Dub is happening. I feel like this is going to be a really interesting one, right, Sherlyn? Because we're expecting just broadly potentially M2 chip news, devices running M2 chip. So likely a new MacBook Air and Mac Minis, the usual macOS and iOS updates. Maybe some other surprises. What is most exciting to you, Sherlyn? You're going to be there. What is driving you to go there?
Yeah. If you're talking about most exciting, it would be the things that I think what I find most exciting would be different from what someone who's a big Apple fan might find most exciting. We're trained to be news hounds. Right. And so we're what's going to make the most news? What's going to be and also specific industry news too, right? Maybe the general public is new MacBooks will be most interesting for me. But no, for someone like me, it's all about those rumored AR, VR glasses or headset that Apple might be working on. Now, to be clear, it's not for sure that they're going to say anything about it at WWDC in a few days, next week, actually. But very recently, I think earlier this week, something kind of fishy happened. So let me tell you about this, Devendra. I don't know if you know about this.
I saw some of the news, but yeah, go for it.
Some company named Realtio Systems LLC trademarked or filed some patent trademark type of thing for something called Realtio OS. And to be clear, Realtio Systems LLC is not Apple, but it's not like Apple hasn't done something similar in the past where it used something called Yosemite LLC trademark macOS,
but not Apple proper, right?
Exactly. Yeah. So people's spidey senses are tingling and pinging and going okay, this could be something, because part of the filing also describes a wearable computer mechanism. So it's all very intriguing, but the thing that tells us this is probably not ready for launch at WWDC is the foreign filing deadline on these submissions, which is June 8th. That's 2 days after WWDC. So if anything, I think we're getting closer to learning more about whatever this Realtio OS thing is, because they're doing these submissions, they're filing these things. It's getting...
We're hearing that could be the OS behind, the glasses.
Whatever
just
device.
TVOS is behind Apple TV, iOS, everything like that.
Exactly. Yeah. So we're getting closer to actually learning more, but whether it's just a one more thing tease at the end of WWDC or if it'll make any sort of appearance at all is still kind of up in the air. And I think for us, that would be the most interesting thing if Apple did do that, right? It would be
This feels like a momentous, it has been a while since they've had a big one more thing, I feel and it feels like we are waiting for that big, it's sort of like you're waiting for that big beat to drop, come on Apple, drop the beat. You know what's going to happen.
Yeah. It's been like the car or the headset. Like, come on, show us something.
It'll be either this year. It'll be either like this event earlier this year or next year or something. But we know it's going to happen soon.
Yeah.
So everybody's just like, do the thing. Say the thing. Drop the beat, please. And specifically, like what we're hearing, just based on the timelines we've reported on in the past, like potentially these are going to be the like AR/VR glasses that could retail for over $2,000, like more meant for developers, but still a test bed for their vision of virtual reality and augmented reality. They're still reportedly working on like full on AR, like goggles type things. And that's like further down the line, but they got to lay the groundwork somewhere, right? So they got to have an OS out. They have to have apps and software. So this would be the beginning.
I would be so excited to see something Reality OS like take on Meta and the metaverse, something like that. Because as much as Meta/Oculus/Facebook have had like a foothold in this space, I feel like Apple has more of what it takes to like drive the mainstream towards something like that. So I don't know. Mm-hmm. We have to see.
It depends. Like I feel like of any company to really, and I really saddens me that Facebook has been the one kind of leading the way. Like when they bought Oculus, I kind of poured one out for Oculus because I always loved that company like as an independent thing.
Yeah.
Facebook has done a good job with stuff like the Oculus Quest. Like they've pumped money into it. They've really like commandeered this market, but they have also made it very Facebook, very like closed off and isolated from everybody else. So I guess we will see. What is happening with Google, by the way? Like, Google kind of killed all their VR, AR stuff for a while, right?
They did at Google I.O. just last month tease. There's no, like, this product doesn't actually have a name from what I can tell, but, like, a pair of AR glasses that are more, like, for translation and transcription. And it seems to have a more like conversation-based sort of approach and function to it than it is about immersing you in a different reality. So more AR than VR and more like on-screen text than anything else so far.
Than like full-on like virtual objects in your field of view or something. Like,
or I a think camera, the dream
is,
yeah.
Or camera, right. Like the dream is like eventually you'll have glasses where you can walk outside and play like Pokemon Go and the freaking Pokemon are like running around by your feet and you can see them like without doing any special things. So maybe we'll get there someday. What do you think, Sherlyn, about like the M2 chip and the MacBook Air? I feel like the MacBook Air is going to be really interesting because we're waiting for like a good redesign of that thing. I love the M1 MacBook Air. I reviewed it. Go check out my review. Like that thing was powerful. It had no fan. It was kind of amazing. But it was still a MacBook Air. Like they didn't actually change much about the design. What would you like to see with a new MacBook Air? You know, like does it need more speed or does it need just like lighter weight?
Getting to like the actual things that people would actually be excited about for next week's show. Yes, the rumor is that a MacBook Air redesign is on the way. And with, like you said, M2. And before we get too far down the MacBook Air sort of discussion, the M2 is supposed to be like, what, a slight boost in performance with 10 GPU cores as opposed to like, you know, 7 to 8.
They had 8 before,
On M1. So the MacBook Air with M2 is supposed to have this new, like, I guess, graphic processing power. But the device itself, the notebook itself, is also, like we've all said, overdue a refresh. And according to the rumor mill, it's like we're expecting obviously a bit more, you know, not full inches, but like, you know, slimming down of the overall device. And then a boxier, more square kind of look that's reminiscent of the 24-inch iMacs that was released last year. And then also sort of similar to that, apparently we're expecting just more colorful MacBook Airs now with like white keyboards, colorful shells. I know. I'm like,
More colors.
That's
kind of do what the iMacs did. Yeah. For me, I want the like nitty gritty stuff. Like I'm looking at the MacBook Air M1. Honestly, I still use that every day. That is like my daily typing and running around machine. Too much screen bezel. Still way too much screen bezel. Like shave that stuff off. Completely lower that lower screen bezel, like the one that actually says MacBook Air.
Right.
I know what computer I'm using. Just remove it. Take it away. Remove those bezels. Give me like an, you know, we love Dell and what they've been doing with the XPS 13 and 15 and 17. Like, give me that. Because right now, I'll talk about this later, but I'm testing the XPS 15. And every time I look at that screen, I'm like, oh, buddy, why can't Apple do this? Why can't Apple just trim off those bezels and give me something that's really nice and clean and beautiful? I'm Yeah, we probably won't get more ports because Apple don't play that. But maybe a bigger touchpad, fix up that screen. The keyboard is already good, but maybe make it more like the ones on the MacBook Pros. There's some good stuff. Make it lighter is always good too.
Always, mm-hmm. Yes. In addition to the MacBook Air, the redesigned MacBook Air, though, it seems like Apple is also testing like 8 other Mac devices, including a pair of Macs, Mac Minis, I believe. And so with the M2 as well as potentially the Mac M2 Pro. So we might see more than just the base configuration of the SoC next week. It could be also like a Pro model is on its way. Offhand,
I mean, think about what they did when they first launched the M1 chips, right? We got the MacBook Air. We got the base level MacBook Pro 13-inch, which I reviewed and I was like, no difference between this and the MacBook Air. Like, why would you buy it other than it has a fan?
The M1.
And then the Mac Mini. So I feel like they're going to repeat history here, right? The stuff we saw earlier eventually refreshes to the MacBook Pros because those were last fall, right? So we got some time, so maybe later this fall. And then we just saw the Mac Studio. So I feel like they're going to keep with this timeline, right?
Yes, I think so too. I mean, like, so it's not going to be completely surprising if they do launch a Mac Mini at WWDC as well. And then, you know, two Macs and a MacBook now. So that's something like 6 more things in testing, according to, like, because Apple is reportedly testing these with third-party apps. And so, like, according to the developer logs of those apps, that's where we're getting this information that all these devices are in testing. You know, there could be anything like MacBook Pros or, like, other devices using the new M2 chips that are being worked on. But I think it's less likely that we're going to see those things next week.
It's going to be the oldest things at this point. That's the Air and the Mini.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Part of the conversation going on in our YouTube live chat right now is whether or not there will be a notch on the MacBook Air. Devendra, I know you had some sort of like feelings about the notch.
I didn't care about the notch. The notch was fine.
Yeah.
The notch
you were like, great, it's fine. Actually. Exactly.
And it's totally fine. If they need to remove screen bezel, if they need to do that as a way to remove screen bezel, it's perfectly fine because you know what I don't like about Macs and Mac OS is that frickin' title bar that's just always sitting up there, kind of not doing anything. So if you shove that up to where the notch is and you have the notch kind of in the middle, that is what I liked about the MacBook Pros. Like it was really unobtrusive when you had a black border up top, like kind of just disappeared. So sure, give me a notch there.
In exchange for slimmer bezels, right?
In exchange for slimmer bezels, like, yeah, balance everything out, please. I would love to see that. Any other things you're expecting? Like, what would you like to see from the new hardware, Shulin? Like, you've tested a bunch of these things, you know?
This seems to be, like, a mostly Mac hardware-focused event. The rest of the stuff we're expecting out of WWDC next week is more around software. And I'm still a PC user. I'm going to test and use MacBooks, sure, but I'm like, fine. Besides the changes that might be coming to macOS, I'm cool, mm-hmm. man. I mean, more ports, like you said, would always be great, but.
Well, you know, you're our like lead Apple queen, Trillin. So I feel like you got to dive more into Apple at this point, right?
I know I am. And I have like our work laptop is MacBooks and I'm in a PC whenever I can. And so like, I'm pretty proud of being ambidextrous with the OS instead of OS. iOS.
I don't know. Yeah.
ambidextrous.
Anyway. Dub is mainly a software event,
yes,
right? Like
exactly.
The whole point of doing Dub is to get developers there, get developers like paying attention to what you can expect in iOS and macOS for later in the year. What are we hearing about the next versions of these platforms?
Yes. So big changes are reportedly coming to iOS 16 and iPadOS 16, starting with, I think people are interested in the idea of an always-on display potentially coming to future iPhones. I mean, this is something that's been long asked for a while.
Android phones do it, right?
Depending on the implementation, but yes, there are Android phones that do it. And
I mean, didn't the Moto X do it?
Yeah, it's like long ago. Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, no. This would come out with iOS 16, but wouldn't be like available unless you're on something like an iPhone 14 Pro or or later. So it's not something I would say everyone can look forward to next week, but we might hear a little bit more detail on how that might work. And again, this is all based off of reports and rumors. We don't know. We're picking the most credible ones, but you know, you never know if Apple will change its mind or mm-hmm. not announce stuff anyway.
And
but,
this is a feature, like we saw this on the Apple Watch, right? Like this came to the Apple Watch pretty much, and that's a much smaller display, like an always on screen.
Yeah.
A similar way.
It's very basic. Yeah.
Yeah, I think the reporting from like Mark Gurman at Bloomberg is basically like they may develop a way to like lower the refresh rate a lot so that basically that screen is not drawing a ton of power and it can still just display basic information. And you kind of have to go to the Pro phones for that, right? Because those have the promotion displays. Those have like the ability to play with refresh rates more. That would make sense.
The iPhone 13, if the iPhone 14 base model doesn't have like higher refresh rates, I will lose my mind. But yeah, okay.
That is, at this point, I feel like that is a must. Like at some point we have to do demanding features. Like, hello, Android phones have had these for years.
At least 90 hertz. 90 hertz.
At least 90 hertz. At least 90 hertz. The public probably won't even notice much, but I feel like they kind of have to have that because Android phones just look better at this point when they're in motion. Right?
It's the main reason I'm not maining an iPhone 13 like base model. It's actually got me in a very tricky situation, right? Because I would love to use the base iPhone 13, which like the review unit that I had before I handed it off to Sam for testing is pink and pretty and light. It's just like the right size for me, but then it doesn't have promotion, so I get annoyed, so I don't use it, and so I'm stuck with the iPhone 13 Pro, which is a brick. It's just like heavy.
You're stuck with it. Well, you're stuck with the big one, right? So that's the thing.
I've got the Pro and the Pro Max, so like I'm even the Pro itself, the smaller one, is too
the Pro
heavy.
Itself is kind of heavy. I like a good chunky phone. Certainly, you know, I feel like the Pro Max is the thing where I feel like it's going too far. What else are we expecting from iOS 16 potentially?
So anyway,
on the home screen.
Anyway, you know? so with the always on display, that I started with that because actually that's the one I wanted to get out of the way. But the more interesting thing with iOS 16 is not just changes coming to things like the health app or the messages app. Notifications are also slated to get a bit of a change, although I don't have all the details there. But like I said, the lock screen might actually get a revamp, including new wallpapers that might integrate widget functionality. So you could
more,
see
more
like
Android
widgets.
Stuff, basically.
Exactly. Well, kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of Android phones have had this for a while.
Yeah. So it's very like, well, you know, they're trying to do more with the lock screen, I guess, because you like if you're thinking about where else can iOS improve and bring in more features that have appeared elsewhere. Lock screen is one area that has still yet to see that much change. So
have you used so iOS has had widgets for a couple mm-hmm. versions now. Like have you used those widgets like
I
regularly?
Have the mm-hmm. yeah, I have the main one, the 2x2 on the top left. That constantly embarrasses me because because it's a carousel, right? And it's like on one of them, I have the Photos app. So when it toggles through the apps that are on that widget, sometimes it's just a picture of me because it's a selfie that showed up.
It's your my entire friend. Camera roll?
Yeah. Huh. Or it's like a picture of my friend. I have a lot of pictures of our video producer, Brian. So sometimes a picture of Brian just shows up. And my people were looking at my phone over my shoulder somehow. They're like, are you just incredibly narcissistic or are you in love with Brian? Like, it's
well,
just
yes,
like...
but also, yeah.
anyway, that's
I do love that widget. I use that one too on my main screen because one thing I'll say is like, it is pointless to really organize your iPhone home screen beyond the first screen, you know, beyond maybe the second screen, but you know, if I'm going to look for an app, I'm going to swipe down. I'm going to start typing an app name and search.
Same.
I'm not going to go pecking around for app groups and whatever. So yeah, Photos up front, Calendar, I feel like it's always a good one. I have Calendar on the second screen. And one thing I just found, too, is the battery widget, which is really nice.
Yep,
if you've
exactly.
got AirPods, if you've got an Apple Watch, it gives you a glanceable way to see all those things. The widgets are good, even though it took Apple a long time to get there. Do you think they'd be useful actually on the home screen?
Well, you said that battery widget is one of your favorite. Imagine that on the home
it's
screen.
It's good.
It would be good. Okay. Like on the lock screen. Yeah. It would be really nice to see on the lock screen. Yeah. Because for me, I'm still like a little old school in the way I use an iPhone. Like I organize the first two pages, right? So I'm not always on the home screen. I'm not always looking at the widget, but when my phone's off or on the lock screen, then yeah, it'd be nice to see that. Although please don't put my random selfies on. I might just have to remove the photos app.
It's going to be an option. I feel like for normal people that have photos of other people, it is just a nice way. Like when I open my phone, it's like, oh, new picture of my daughter that I haven't looked at in a couple years. And the photos app does a good job of like bringing back old highlights and like doing tweaks to them. Is like, that is actually really interesting use of like AI and, you know, you have all this information, Apple. So kind of bring it back to me because my human brain cannot.
It's more pictures of my parents now because I've got more pictures of them now. It's good. Yeah. but anyway, so that's coming apparently to iOS 16, and then iPad OS 16 is reportedly also, according to some code sleuthing, iPad OS 16 might come with a multitasking mode that could enable freely resizable windows. just to, you know, be a bit more PC-like.
Yeah, these windows that you can move around anywhere and resize them however you want, almost like a real computer.
Yeah, exactly. Hey.
Yeah.
Hey, who knows?
Talk about lock screen widgets, though. Like, that would be really nice on iPad. You see everything there.
Oh, yeah. You can hopefully you can lay them out however, too, right?
Laid out calendar, battery, everything, like, all at once. And maybe with an always-on screen, too. Like, maybe that would be nice on an iPad.
Mm-hmm. So, those are, I mean, we obviously don't have the full details on everything. I'm sure there's going to be limits to those, you know, new features, if they are actually new features coming. So, we'll have to stay tuned. Another area that's supposed to be getting a big change, and that I'm personally pretty excited about, is potentially Watch OS 9 might be getting some pretty serious changes. We're hearing things like better sleep tracking might be coming, which, I've only been asking for like, I don't know, years now. The only thing holding back Watch OS from competitors like Fitbit has been sleep tracking is garbage. So anyway,
well, also the fact that you have to wear something while you're sleeping too. I hate that idea.
That's never going to happen for me, really. And I don't think that that's something that watchOS is going to solve. But anyway, better sleep tracking. I don't know how better. Maybe it won't be reliant on you setting a bedtime schedule anymore. But anyway, there's also improved health tracking with more running stats showing up on the screen when you're tracking that. And then some more just overall improvements to that system. So I can't wait to learn more. I think watchOS 8 was like a nice but not huge jump from watchOS 7. So I think watchOS 9 might bring about like a facelift or just real meaty improvements that we could all look forward to.
I feel like the Apple Watch is due for a major update too, right? Like design wise, like not much has really changed over the last couple of years. Like I have a Series 4, and that is when they made the big jump to the bigger screen, the slightly more like refined stuff. Not much really has changed since then, like more sensors and stuff, but not like functionally or visually.
Right. Series 7 has like a much larger screen. That's about it.
Yeah. give me a recent update, Apple, because that thing still runs really well. Anything else we want to shout out? Like, I know there have been some iPhone 14 design leaks going around, or at least like we have talked about it. It was a thing people were talking about. What can we expect for the iPhone 14, right? Do you think the notch will still be there, or are we expecting hole punch cameras at this point?
Honestly, I couldn't tell you. I think that it would be, I mean, I have my own personal wish list, obviously. Like, yes, a hole punch camera would be good, but I don't know really necessarily what's holding Apple back from doing that. I couldn't tell you how realistic it was. I would like, again, like I've already said, promotion on the base models. And then, yeah, just typical things across the board, like better battery life always. And let's see what they're going to do with their cameras and that sort of stuff.
What are they going to do with the cameras? There have been some mock-ups from case based on case design information. So I think Dave Lee put out a video, and I've seen like pictures of like, this is what the iPhone 14, potentially just the Pro, not the base model, but could be the hole punch with the little webcam and another hole punch for the Face ID sensor, which To me, looks real bad. Looks,
it
doesn't look that different than the notch, to be honest. Whereas an Android phone can have just a little hole for the camera. That's it. They don't have to do the face sensors or anything.
Well, I think that's right? Yeah. And you know what? You just touched on, I just remember that's probably why they can't really do a hole punch camera, because Face ID relies on like a more, I think, sophisticated camera system.
It's a bigger camera. So the mock-ups we've seen, basically two holes. It's a little hole for the camera and like a little like a oval hole next to it for the Face ID sensor. And I'm like, that doesn't... You're not actually saving much there, but okay. It's progress, I guess, for
and
Apple.
And so, like, for Android phones that have the hole punch camera, like, you know, have you noticed that the Galaxy Notes or whatever, RIP, but, like, they just don't do the iris scanning anymore because it would require more hardware up front than a hole punch, like, I guess, notch or whatever can hide and can accommodate. So Android phones don't rely on Face Unlock because... Even if there is a basic rudimentary face unlock available on Android, that's not the most secure. And that's why they all still have fingerprint sensors and in-display fingerprint sensors. Speaking of, if we're talking about wishlist items for the iPhone 14, some sort of Touch ID would be interesting for me. I don't know they're going to ever bring it back, but... You know.
Bring it, put it under the glass. What are you doing, Apple? Like, just nobody likes Face ID. I feel like that's what it kind of comes down to. It's nice when it works.
Yes,
but not when you're wearing a mask. Yeah. Not if your like phone is slightly off center. Like it is just like not as useful to me or not as convenient as as fast as Touch ID was.
Yeah, it's also just scary easy to unlock it with like your friend, like you unlock your friend's phone. You know what I mean? Like show it up to your friend's face or whatever, that sort of thing. So a lot of things to talk about.
Or for police to do that too.
Exactly.
Like, it's a whole thing.
So one more thing I wanted to bring up or draw attention to is, you know, WWDC also tends to be a place where Apple talks about its privacy and security issues. And given how much its AirTags and like iOS features around CSAM, which is child sexual abuse material, have been in the news lately, I wouldn't be surprised if we hear a little bit more about like, not direct addressing that, but sort of like, we're best known for our privacy, that sort of stuff as well. I don't know if we're going to see more like AirTag, you know, unwanted AirTag stalking prevention features being talked about at DubDub, but it would be interesting to see how Apple handles that moving forward.
Anything else you want to mention about like what we're expecting? Because we have some comments from people in the chat that we could get to.
We can always get to the comments. Go for it.
Let's get to the comments. Thank you, producer Ben, for highlighting some of these. Michael Brescher in the chat says, if there was a blue MacBook Air, give it to me. Yeah, I like the colors. The new iMac colors are really like pastel and chill. Like bring some color back into this. I feel like I think the reporting was a Johnny Ive was not into colors. And that is why Apple really just leaned on like silver, very, very clean, minimalist
stuff. It was a gold for a while, right?
Was it?
There was like a random 12-inch MacBook was gold.
Oh, yeah. The random 12-inch MacBook. Yeah. Give us more choices. Give us more colors. I feel like that's a good branding thing for Apple, too, because those are the most accessible laptops for most consumers. And Michael Brescher also says he has a MacBook Air 2020. It still works beautifully, but it could use some smaller bezels, especially with the Dell XPS and other Windows laptops. You know, you look... If you buy a brand new Apple laptop in 2022 and somebody walks in with an XPS 13 from 3 or 4 years ago, the screen is going to look nicer and more modern on the Dell. And I feel like that could be a problem for a lot of users. Felix Fortuna said it would be cool if Apple placed a fingerprint reader on the power button of the new Mac Mini. I feel like with Macs, it has to be on the keyboard. Like that's the way they've kind of managed all this stuff because people put their Mac Minis like in a corner or far away. So you can't have stuff you're hitting. Yeah. Do those even have buttons like other than the power
button?
And the
back or something. Right. The power button's what they're talking about. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So that's a good idea, but you can always buy a Touch ID keyboard. So that is the main thing there. And Rob M says, off the wall wish Apple Pencil support on the iPhone. Sure, with the Pro Max.
Yeah, big enough, yeah.
Maybe a smaller stylus. Maybe like a Samsung Galaxy size stylus would be kind of nice for a phone that freaking large. That would be kind of nice.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We'll see. I don't see Apple kind of making a whole new Apple Pencil for the iPhone.
The Pencil's so big. Like, it is big for the big tablets. Exactly. So that's pretty much it. Yeah.
We'll see if they, like, ever enable Pencil support on later iPhone models. But it's a tricky one, too. They need to find enough, like, support, I guess, for something like that.
Gotcha. Well, thank you for the comments, folks. You too can leave us live questions if you join us Thursdays on our YouTube channel at 10 a.m. Eastern. Drop us an email at podcast@engadget.com. If you've got any thoughts, we could talk about them in future episodes.
I really want to find out your predictions. Send them to podcast@engadget.com. Yes.
Let's move on to some other news. And some cool things happened this week. Google announced that YouTube's app, the TV app, now can use your phone as a second screen. And that is pretty cool. I have not tested this yet myself, but basically the idea is that, if you had YouTube open on maybe Apple TV or a Google TV device, you're watching stuff. When you get to YouTube on your phone, it's not just going to be like, let's play another video. It can actually sync up with the TV and let you comment on that video. It can let you do things around that video, which I think is really cool. I don't know about you, Sherlyn, but for me, YouTube has kind of replaced my like random TV browsing. Like I have a good home feed. I get late night clips. I get like video game clips and stuff like that. That is just where I go when I'm bored and I just want to watch something.
Yeah.
So this is really, really cool. Would this fit into the way you use YouTube?
Hells yes. TV? I mean, I'm not a big comment lever on YouTube. Mm-hmm. I just get afraid of.
I know you're a queen troll. You know.
Yeah, sure. I do get like really frustrated with like what my phone turns into when I'm casting YouTube to my TV, which is that like, yeah, it's just like a cue machine device. It's just like hard to really use or navigate or do anything with when I want to read more details about a video or actually read the comments. Yes, I can do it, but like not really. And then if I'm just trying to browse another video before I add it to a list, that's nearly impossible.
I don't even know if this is part of the casting thing. I think when you cast, it actually already kind of does this, but when you're, if you just like browse around on Apple TV and you go to YouTube and try to start playing video, then your phone app is very dumb.
Yeah, I do both. Yeah. Okay. So I've done both cast to this. It's even like, sorry, I love you YouTube people or mm-hmm. Google TV people. But yo, every time I go from Google TV and I'm like, like in the suggestive feed on the Google TV homepage, they're like, hey, this video, we recommend this video to you. I'm like, cool, click through. I want to watch this. Take me to it. And then they're like, hi, you have multiple accounts signed into this TV. Let's choose one. I was like, sure, choose my YouTube account. And then they forget.
You live in a one-person house. The one you always
use. Oh, but it's like my fake YouTube and my real YouTube, sure, whoever, sure, right? Sure. But the thing is, like, then I pick one and they're like, oops, we forgot what we were taking you to buy. I'm like, give me that video you'd like suggested to me. What the hell? And so anyway,
this is when I say Google sometimes is just really bad at consumer products. Like, it's
side
this
rant.
Sort of thing where, like,
that was
like,
a side rant.
You're just,
yep.
I just want to watch the video. You're trying to feed me. Like, that's it. So anyway, YouTube TV, YouTube on TVs is about to get more interesting. So, check that out. Also, I'd recommend, that's a good experience. And this is where I talk about, is it YouTube Premium?
Yes,
that is why YouTube
good.
Premium.
Yeah.
It's worth it for me just because no ads at all. And that just gives you like, it's like pure content feed at that point, which good and bad, I don't know. In other news, Microsoft has officially announced the Surface Laptop Go 2. This is the next version of the cheapest and smallest Surface laptop, Surface device, actually, the cheapest Surface device. I thought the original was kind of so-so. It has like a 12.4-inch screen with a really low resolution display. Like the old one was like 1536 by 1024. It looks like this new one is that as well. So like that is sub 1080p. That is
low. Yeah, just under 1080.
In this day and age.
Yeah.
Just under 1080p. I'm like, that became kind of an issue as I was testing it because it just felt like everything was a little too low res. It looks and feel like a cool Surface laptop. Like the outer case was metal. The inside was like plastic. But I think it was just really slow last time. It had with a 10th gen processor, really slow storage. Now they're bumping up to an 11th gen Intel Core i5 CPU, Xe graphics, so better graphics finally. Better storage all around, 128 gigabyte to 256 gigabyte SSD, starting at $600. So overall, like, it seems like a more well-rounded starter PC. Are you at all intrigued by this, Sherlyn?
I'm more intrigued by how the news got announced, which is it was leaked the day before, and then Microsoft was like, screw it, we're gonna announce it now. That's what I think happened, but the timing seems to track. Here's the thing, like, with the Surfaces, I hate that, like, what, $600 is their base price for, like, not the best specs? And you can, with $600, still get a really good laptop from someone else.
Can you?
Have you looked at the HP Pavilion Aero? You can.
Yeah, but have you looked at how heavy those are?
Like, the HP Pavilion Aero is not heavy. It's, like, it's comparable to some ultra portables. I think it more skims on, like, at least based on our review that Dan Cooper wrote, like, the specs are pretty comparable to, like, what's out there. But you are right that there's trade-offs.
So, like, this is it. Yeah, there are some trade-offs. In general, Windows laptops, cheap ones tend to be heavy and don't look very cool, you know, whereas this looks pretty sleek. It looks like a Surface laptop, you know, it has a smaller screen. I feel like for a, maybe for, like, an elementary school kid or... Yeah, elementary school kids, not high school kids. But I feel like a kid who needs, like, a little laptop to tote around.
I'd give them a Chromebook. I don't know. I
No! What are you? No Chromebooks in this house.
Dang, okay, okay.
My daughter deserves more than a Chromebook.
Daughter deserves better than a Chromebook. Okay, I hear you. Well, I think we have to wait until we get one of these into test before, like, either of us can say for sure.
Hopefully we'll be testing it soon. Keep an eye out for a review. You could go back and read my review, the original, where it was just like, I'm a Surface fanboy. I will come out and say, like, I want these laptops to succeed.
I love
and
Surfaces, yeah.
That first iteration just had some problems, and I couldn't look past them. In other news, Sheryl Sandberg, the COO of Facebook, is leaving Meta after 14 years. And that is, just pointing this out because this is pretty big news. I feel like she has been synonymous with Facebook basically since she was appointed. I believe people used to call her the adult in the room because Zuckerberg was like 20-something, you know, when all this started. So she was the person that kind of kept him in line, dealt with, like, hiring and higher level, like, decisions. And she just yesterday announced that she will be leaving after later this year. And Facebook's current Meta's chief growth officer, Javier Olivan, will be taking over that role. It's going to be different than what she was doing because basically Zuckerberg doesn't need a babysitter anymore. Like, that's kind of what this was.
Anyway.
Yeah. So, Sherlyn, you've been, I feel like, covering the tech industry, you know, for so long too, Sherlyn. Like, even before you were covering tech, like, who was Sheryl Sandberg to you? Like, who did she represent?
Yeah, no, I was on a call when like, I heard this news, and I was just like, oh, like, I didn't, it came to me like Sheryl Sandberg is leaving. No one needed to say the company name. I was just like, oh, the Zuckerberg thing. I was just like, cool, okay, like, yeah. Somehow I've equated Sandberg with Zuckerberg and therefore Meta/Facebook. So no, I was just like, oh crap, that's like big news. Before I really worked in, you know, tech media, I care a lot about personnel at big tech companies, or maybe that's a folly of youth. But anyway, now though, like, I think it's, when I was trying to see the details of what happened, first of all, like, she's going to remain on the company's board of directors. The other thing is, it's not clear to me, at least, and I don't know if it's clear to you, Devendra, of, like, what led to this. Is she just ready to take on something new, or was there something else that happened? Because
maybe she needs to do something else in her life. Don't forget, we learned last month, I don't know if we talked about it here on the show, but there was a report that she, like, actively tried to block news stories about Activision CEO Bobby Kotick, who we've talked about, who she is currently dating or was dating at the time. And that was like a big uh-oh. Like, that could be a big issue. So I don't think it's because of that, but she also kind of doesn't need this job anymore.
Right.
Like, Facebook doing fine. She's free to do whatever else she wants. She, she suffered a great personal tragedy several years ago too. Her husband died, like, very suddenly. So, like, you know, go live your best life. She could do all sorts of other things. It is just like, she kind of represented this new wave of tech and tech startups and kind of like what they represented for better or worse, right? Like, I don't know. Did you ever treat Lean In as any kind of, like, gospel?
No.
Or did you always, like, call that out as being a little kind of BS at the start. I don't know. It was
something I chose to not be bothered by or pay too much attention to.
A lot of people found it inspirational. Like, yeah, just lean in, do the hard parts. And I think the criticism now is that really oversimplified how hard it is for women in tech, certainly because her strategy didn't actually help that many people.
I still struggle with my feelings around like white women being like feminist ambassadors for maybe women of color sometimes too.
Yeah. And the advice is just work harder.
And that's not right.
Work harder.
It's a little tied up with this. But anyway, I do think it's worth pointing out that Sandberg has said that like she is not sure what the future will bring and that she may, you know, be spending more time on her philanthropic work and her foundation. So that just sounds like
she is rich and influential. Like literally you could go do anything. So yeah, best of luck to her. I don't think it's going to mean any functional difference for Facebook at this point, but we shall see. Let's go through some quick news stories, by the way. TweetDeck for Mac is shutting down on July 1st, and I forgot entirely that there was still a full TweetDeck app just floating around out there.
Yeah.
But people on Twitter seemed like very, very annoyed that this was happening. I think not many people realize that TweetDeck for Mac, and even when it was on Windows, they were just web wrappers. Like, go to the website, bookmark the website. It is pretty much the same experience, right? Do you have any feelings about this?
Well, the only time I use TweetDeck is when I'm on news shift, like our news feed shift.
Wait, what is your TweetDeck? How do you access Twitter on your computer?
I use the browser. I'm very much like...
You know the website?
Yeah.
Just twitter.com or tweetdeck.com?
Tweetdeck.com. I haven't done the new shifting for a bit. Yeah. So I think that might be an adjustment. I used to have the app way back when I was just starting out in tech media and I was trying to keep on top of all sorts of tech news. But I don't have any like emotional lock in. So I'm cool with, I'm just like, all right, well, I'll see when it impacts me, I guess.
Yeah. You can turn web apps into like apps that are on your desktop, by the way, like both on Windows and Mac. So that is a thing. Look into that if this is a problem for you. I hope this means like TweetDeck on the web gets better because it still feels freaking ancient. It still doesn't have all the features that base Twitter does. Like, I forget if polls are even active there. Like, sometimes you have to click through and go to the like main Twitter website to access some of these features. So sure, I don't care about the app, but please make TweetDeck better. But also, Who knows what's going to happen? Like, who knows if this Musk acquisition is going to go through? Like, who knows? Who knows what's happening with that now?
I don't even want to. I have like some severe PTSD from like.
We're waiting for some updates on like what's happening there. But it seems like somebody has had some buyer's remorse and is like desperately trying to get out of the deal. Yeah. How is your French, Sherlyn?
Bad. Very, very bad. Extremely terrible.
Can you pronounce the new official terms for esports and streaming? That France has they have banned the English gaming terms esports and streaming. What are the new terms?
Apparently streamer is now, and pardon my French, quite literally, but un joueur en direct. Shit. And esports is jeu vidéo de compétition.
Vidéo.
Compétition. I don't know.
Okay.
Anyway, I apologize. Uh-huh. I have not good French. Not at all. But yeah, Devendra, you're saying France has officially banned gaming terms that are in English, like esports and streaming. You can't say esports in France anymore. Just sorry
about it. It's illegal. This is like part of the weird like nationalist stuff that's happening. It's part of like the made in France like cycle. It reminds me of the Freedom Fries stuff that crazy American politicians did during the beginning of the Iraq War, and everything in France was not participating in that. Good on them for that. Yeah, this is just kind of funny. This is a fun story because I don't have any broader takes about this other than France being kind of hilarious.
Yeah. Well, I guess I'm just like, what's going to happen if I go and I start saying esports by accident? I'm like, activity.
I want to go there with a shirt that says esports. Yeah.
And streaming, woo! Like
streaming just, on the back.
Ooh, I don't even.
What are you gonna do?
I'm not gonna troll because I get scared easily. But like,
well, you
on.
Know what? Yeah, You know, it would be nice, folks, like if you can speak French or if you have good pronunciation, send us these terms in an audio memo. Shoot them to podcast@engadget.com. I would love to hear the actual way to say these things. Let's move on to what we've been working on. And just want to quickly shout out, as I mentioned before, I am reviewing the latest Dell XPS 15. It's an XPS 15. If you go back and look at my review of the 2020 model, I really like it. Mm-hmm. 2020 gave us the like big redesign that we were waiting for. So very thin bezels, no bottom bezel at all. Like that screen, like just kissing the keyboard. It's like right there. So it is basically that design again with 12 gen chips and NVIDIA like nice graphics. So I'm doing some testing. I'm looking forward to writing that up. So keep an eye out for that review. What are you working on, Sherlyn?
I'm heading to WWDC, so we're getting ready for that. I am also working on, I have like a guide that I'm putting up soon, and then we're gonna publish an actual.
You sound unsure about this.
Yeah, no, I like got back to work after like my 10 days with family. I was just like, what is work? What is life? So I'm sort of still in that place a little bit, but no, I'm getting back up to speed. So taking stock of what else I have left to do besides WWDC, which includes testing of more stuff in the background. No embargoes at the moment. Y'all can rest easy. But as always, I'm sure they're coming soon.
Let's talk about some stuff around Engadget. We published a best kitchen gadgets guide, which includes my beautiful Breville toaster oven.
Yeah.
Or actually, not mine. This is the Breville Smart Oven Air Fryer Pro. This is the super upgraded version. But yeah, some cool gadgets here. Anything you want, Sherlyn?
Yes, I will say it's like a kitchen package too. It's not just like a best kitchen gadgets only. So there's, I mean, I wrote about like food delivery services that I eventually settled on being like a person who lives in a cosmopolitan city. And then, you know, I think Matt Smith also did like an air fryer guide, which is cool. I've always been like curious about buying an air fryer for myself, perhaps, and he went and tested a lot. Sam Rutherford did an immersion blender guide. So a lot of these like kitchen gadgets that we tested, in addition to like just overall tips for like, you know, being in and making the most use of your kitchen.
Yes, I did something, the Ozma instant cold brew machine that we've talked about a couple months ago. So I wrote up my experience with that thing. There's some cool things here, but my main thing to everybody out there, get a toaster oven. It will change your life. It makes so much meal prep so much easier. I threw a whole chicken into a toaster oven last week, and like
raw,
an hour later,
raw.
I had like a yeah.
Okay,
that's what you. That's
oh, so you baked it? Okay. Uh
huh. Yeah. Uh huh. Uh huh. I cooked the whole chicken from raw in the toaster oven, and it came out beautifully. So you know these things, especially with a child, heating up child foods and chicken nuggets and whatnot, these things are indispensable. And check out our entire guide at Engadget.com.
We also want to shout out Nate Ingram's review of the Sonos Ray soundbar. This is the $280 soundbar that is, you know, really just Sonos' lowest priced product this far. And you know, it seems like he, you know, not didn't hate it. it's just not, it's good for what it costs, I guess. And yeah, it's not,
I mean, it's a $279 soundbar, so that's still not budget.
Yeah,
like there are $100 cheap, right. There are $200 soundbars that sound really good. But for Sonos, I guess this is budget Sonos, right?
Exactly. For all the other features that you're getting with any Sonos speakers, you're paying more for that than just the sound quality. But from what we can see from Nate's review anyway, those of you with larger living rooms or larger spaces in general just might want to consider something that is louder and perhaps maybe more expensive.
Yeah. Look at the Beam. Look at the Beam, everybody. Or I just saw this story. The Sonos Arc, which is their freaking their Dolby Atmos one, is discounted quite a bit if you buy a refurbed unit. So go check Engadget.com for that link. That is a great deal if you have a little more money to spend. That thing sounds incredible. Also, Igor at Engadget, he wrote up Diablo Immortal, the long in the works, like mobile / MMO rethinking of Diablo. It's set between Diablo 2, that last expansion, and Diablo 3. It's Diablo. It's Diablo on mobile. And first I have to ask, because we always like to talk about Trillin in games. Sherlyn, are you a Diablo fan? Are you secretly
like the idea of Diablo?
A demon hunter?
I love the idea of demon hunting, but no, I have not played it. Uh-huh. I want to hunt demons, okay. Though. Give me.
You can.
Send me. I want to be Constantine.
You can on your phone
without the cancer. Okay, cool. All right.
You want to be Constantine? Yeah. Constantine is good. That would be a good game. It seems like this is a good Diablo game. Like, it's a little simpler. The skills are a little dumber. You're still playing. Like, you have to use like virtual controls if you're just playing on your phone. You can attach like a Razer Kishi or what do you call it, the Backbone for that too. I hear the problem is like they're leaning really into paywall stuff and
freemium?
You know, paying money for things. Yeah.
Hey, okay.
Like loot box stuff, basically. Like, this game is not going to be sold in country, or is not going to be available in countries that have loot box laws. But they have these things called legendary gems and crests that are mostly paywalled. It costs you $25 for a pack of 10 legendary crests. You need those for a better chance of getting a randomized legendary gem. Oh my god. It's just, and that's the only way you get the good items.
I'm not gonna play this.
Okay. And the drops are all random, so you can even spend that money and not get the things you want. We are worrying, I know our podcast producer Ben is worrying that could these mechanics make their way into future Diablo releases? I don't know, but I think a lot of these game companies are looking at these things and they just have like slot machines for eyes, you know, like in a cartoon. They're like, more microtransactions and people are going to pay this. NFTs in our games, which I know Square and a couple other companies are really looking hard at. These companies are looking for new ways to basically make money from addicted players, and this is certainly one way.
They're like Brad Bakshi in Mythic Quest.
This sounds like a really easy way to get into Diablo.
I want to try. And if not on mobile, what's the platform for Diablo? Is it like console or is it PC?
I mean, this game is mobile. It's mostly a PC series, but this is a mobile game. There is a PC version coming, I believe, so that is also going to be happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would try the game to be, like you said, an introduction to the series, and then I would get tired really quickly and maybe just pay for the like PC version or something, you know.
Would you get tired really quickly? I've seen you play
this. Is well, look, I've jumped from Solitaire to Jigsaw to the New York Times crossword, where I've cleared everything in the archive now, and I need something new. Wow. So Diablo might be it, you know, although I did just start reading. Yeah. Instead, so
that's a thing you could do instead of games. I'll probably spend some time with this. I'm not a huge Diablo player. I do remember my first time like getting into Diablo, like it was like Diablo 2 or something, after hearing PC players gush about it forever, and it's just like it's a little top-down game where you're clicking around and killing things.
Top,
I'm like,
down.
Yeah, it's it is more basic than you think, and it's still really addictive and it feels really good, but okay. I don't know.
All right.
Click, 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 click,
I just,
kill.
I just want to stare a demon in the face and shoot it to smithereens. Is that so much to ask?
Then you should be playing Doom, honestly.
Doom, okay. Yeah.
You should play Doom. All
right, cool.
You should play
Doom. Is it demons?
We will live stream Sherlyn playing Doom at some point. Let's move on to our picks, our pop culture picks, or whatever picks of the week. Sherlyn, what do you got?
I have some travel tips for everybody, and that's why Devendra had to be like, not pop culture. Tips for the week. Mostly because I've just come back from a slew or a bout of travel, and I am about to travel again. And on our live stream now is a picture of an airplane in the sky, which is great. maybe there's a picture of me inside, who knows. So after traveling so much, you know, for the first time really since the pandemic, I've learned some things. I need to shout out our executive editor Aaron Suporez for cluing me onto this one, which is to use a hotels app whenever you get the chance. For me, it was like I was using the Marriott Bonvoy app for a while, and then I was using the Hilton Honors app, and this both of them have great like features where you can directly message the hotel instead of trying to call front desk for every little request. You can check out info. But I think the most interesting feature, and this is on the Hilton app is the ability to not only check into your room a day early, but also to select your room from like what's available. I don't know that.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah, it's nice, mm-hmm. isn't it? Like, so when my parents were in town, I, you know, had their room on my phone, and I was like, okay.
Where did your parents stay? Were they close to you?
They were very close. They were in Jersey City. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I put them up at like the Canopy by Hilton in Jersey City, which I will write an extended review about another time. But, I was like, hey, you guys wanna pick your room? They were like, can you do that? I was like, yeah. Do you like a high floor? Do you like a near the elevator? Like, I had so many. I could see literally the floor plans of every room and pick the one within the price range that I paid for and choose it. So I thought that was pretty cool. And then you get obviously the digital key features. You get to message the hotel. You get like to check out from the app, and so you don't need to do front desk stuff anymore. Even though I'd say argue that like you could walk out of the hotel for a very long time now without checking out. But yeah, so I recommend, like, if you're staying at a hotel, you know, consider using the app there. You might find more features in it available than before. And then the other thing that I used more during this last trip was Turo, the ride sharing app. Me and my cousin were able to use this app to book some cars for parts of our trip. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very nice. Easy to do. It used to be known as Relay Rides.
Right. I remember that. Yeah.
With Turo's history. Yeah.
Is that better than just calling like Ubers for where you need to go, like a big Uber or something?
So yeah, I got it in like Portland, where we were trying to take a day trip out to Acadia National Park. So it was like a 3-hour drive, that sort of thing. And then, so I only did it for a day. And you're not going to Uber 3 hours. That's going to be like $500.
But is it a driver, or is it you have to drive?
You have to drive. So it's like renting a car, basically, but from someone who owns their own car, rather than dealing with Hertz or Enterprise. So you get often better deals. You also get a more personal, like, touch, I guess, and is very, very convenient. There is, however, like a car renting-ish service coming soon to some cities. It's called Kite with a Y, K-Y-T-E.
I mean, what was it called? What was the car rental service? The name is escaping me at this point.
Oh, no.
I don't know. That was a big thing.
But Kite will deliver the car to you. Which I think is fun, as opposed to having to go meet like a car owner or go to the car rental station or whatever to pick up a car. So Kite, I'm looking forward to testing them out when they do launch. But anyway, those are just like two travel app tips that I have in general too. If you're going to Portland, Maine, because my flights got canceled, I just want to tell you to be careful, because there's still PWM, the Portland International Jetport, is still under construction. Most of their runways are closed. They have this very short runway left. So if there's any sort of weather at all, a lot of flights from in and out of there are going to be canceled, delayed, whatever. So just a tip that if you're considering Portland, Maine, maybe try another airport. Or wait. I don't know.
Or another airport. Well, I'm glad you figured that out. Do you have any pop culture to share, Sherlyn, or are you just all out there?
I did watch a few movies that I know you're not going to approve of. Yeah, and I'm ready. This conversation before the call started. I'm a Harry Potter fan. And I will love any chance to be immersed in that world, any chance I get. So then, you know, when Fantastic Beasts dropped this week, I did watch it on HBO Max.
Which Fantastic Beasts is this?
This is the third one. It's called The Secrets of Dumbledore, I think. And, you know, it's the first one to feature Mads Mikkelsen as Grindelwald.
The greatest.
Replacing Mads Mikkelsen, yeah. And he was really good in it. I've seen the interviews he's done about this role where, you know, he's discussed, like, people have asked him, oh, are you going to, like, you know, do Johnny Depp's version of the character or not? And he said, no, to do that would be creative suicide. And he's not wrong. Like, he plays it a whole other way. I think with any Johnny Depp character nowadays, you're going to expect some sort of whimsy is the nice word for it. And Mads Mikkelsen as Grindelwald is just more...
He's more insidious. Smoldering. Like, he's more like, yeah.
Very smoldering. I could see... I was like, oh, I see why Dumbledore was in love with you. I was like...
It's because it's Mads.
Oh, you're like really hot.
The only
thing like,
I remember about this freaking series is at the end of the first movie... Colin Farrell's face like melts away.
Oh, yeah,
and
yeah,
he
yeah.
turns into Johnny Depp, and everybody in my theater is like, what the hell? What?
Yes.
And that was a secret for the movie. And we were like,
I know.
And the movie was like, look, it's Johnny Depp. And everybody was just confused and like, I don't know if I like this. Okay, sure.
Yeah.
This series at this point is among movies that don't exist, I would say. Like movies that are made, are released, are out there. But to my eye, I think to like much of the general public, it's just like, the movie does not exist. That movie never actually happened. You know, even though it's on the front page of HBO Max, doesn't exist.
It's just it's just been such a problematic situation for that series, right? I mean, there's J.K. Rowling and transphobia. Mm-hmm. Then there's like, I mean,
and the whole Depp thing, especially now
the Johnny Depp thing. But the Johnny Depp thing is pretty funny because if you think about the three movies so far in this particular series, there that character Grindelwald has been played by three different actors for the bulk of each movie. So the first one was Colin Farrell most of the time, and the second one was the real and only one that Johnny Depp was, you know, Grindelwald and all of it. And then we had Mads Mikkelsen, which like, it's just the way it played out. I'm sure that Johnny Depp was supposed to be, you know, Grindelwald in the third one as well. Anyway, and then there's Ezra Miller, who like, God, I wish I could like enjoy watching this person act, because they were, I enjoyed them in the Justice League movie. I enjoyed them as Flash. I didn't hate their portrayal of Credence.
They had some good like indie movies back in the day, and now dude is
they did some
having a lot of issues. So look up new stories about that guy. I think
they're.
Yeah, I hope he gets some help. It sounds like he's going through a lot or something.
I think their pronoun is they.
But
So no, there's a lot going on there that might add to like the whole violent outburst from this person. That's why this series and this franchise is in a very weird place right now. Good luck, I guess. I just like to be in that wizarding world and to listen to the
doesn't
music.
Exist. Never happened. Movies, I don't know what you're talking about, Sherlyn. These movies don't exist. I'll talk about some things real quick. Undone season 2, I think I mentioned it a couple of weeks ago, but I'm actually making my way like towards the end and just want to quickly shout out the show. Freaking gorgeous, amazing, has like brought me to tears several times because it is a beautiful look at like a generational trauma and what if you had like the superpowers to like go back in time and change reality and, you know, help your family. Would you do it? Could you do it? What is the impact of that? It's also beautiful because it's like all rotoscoped animation, so like every frame of the series looks like a freaking painting. I love it. I think it's incredibly well written and well acted, and it is fantastic. Rosa Salazar is very good in this. I love her in everything, but she's particularly great here. Also, Bob Odenkirk plays her father, who has a much bigger role in season 2. So if you like season 1 and you didn't think they could actually go harder or bigger with it, definitely check out season 2. It's some amazing stuff. Also wanted to quickly shout out Barry on HBO, which I forget if I talked about here. Barry's real good. Barry's really good.
Yeah,
and
it's really good.
It started out as being like, oh, Bill Hader is doing like a hitman show that's kind of a dark comedy at times. And I think that this show is like really coalesced into something like truly special. The most recent episode, both one of the funniest things I have seen in like recent memory. There's like one scene in particular that I've watched like 5 or 6 times at this point because it is hilarious, both in its execution and the way it's all put together. Also, randomly turned into like an incredible action sequence from Bill Hader, somebody who clearly likes movies and likes chase movies and action movies. So Barry is so good. If you like weird, irreverent comedy, if you like Bill Hader and Stephen Root, there's a ongoing joke around Stephen Root, an actor who I've loved forever. The show feels like it was made specifically for me and the weird things I'm into. So yeah, check out Barry on HBO.
That's it for our episode this week, everyone. Thank you, as always, for listening. Our theme music is by game composer Dale North. Our outro music is by our very own Terrence O'Brien. The podcast is produced by Ben Elman. You can find Devendra online at
Devendra on Twitter and at the Filmcast podcast at thefilmcast.com.
If you want to send me travel tips or just travel questions, I am somehow a seasoned traveler at this point. I am at Sherlyn Lowe on Twitter. Email us your thoughts at podcast@engadget.com. Leave us a review, please, on iTunes and subscribe on anything that gets podcasts.
No Chromebooks in this house. I'm sorry. My daughter deserves more than a Chromebook.